evening and welcome to Joy 99.7 FM and to tonight's edition of Springboard, your virtual university, and to Behind the Scenes Edition 2. We have another big one for you tonight. My name is Albert Okran, and I'm doing this with the support of the Virtual Academic Board, chaired by Comfort, with support from Matthew, the hardworking Priscilla, Amos, Jojo, and Emmanuel. Tonight, on behalf of the Academic Board, I hereby matriculate you into a week of excellence. May this week be good for you. May the Lord be your light and your salvation. May He watch over your family, and may He give you a testimony that would last you for a long time. Springboard is brought to you by Legacy and Legacy and your superstation Joy 99.7 FM. We are partnered in this broadcast by some of Ghana's finest brands. A big thank you to MTN, the enterprise group UMB Bank, and the Access Pension Trust. Also, to say thank you to our print media partner, The Graphic Business. But what can we do without you, our listeners? So thank you to you all out there for making this a very integral part of your week. And tonight is special. So how big an issue is COVID-19 for you as a person? If you had to rank this in terms of significance, importance in your life, would it be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, or 10? In terms of impact, in terms of significance, in terms of what word can I use? The English scholar is not here. She would have given me one more word to use. But really, how big is COVID-19 in the scheme of things in the globe and in your life? Last week, we had a wonderful discussion. At some points, very surreal and very, very thought-provoking, as we went behind the scenes with our friends from the medical fraternity, largely doctors, exploring the level of disruption, family changes, dietary changes, risk, fear, everything that goes into managing what has been called the biggest pandemic in living history, or the most disruptive force in recent times. Tonight, as promised, we continue that discussion and widen the scope to bring on other health professionals just to get a sense of the totality of the picture and the totality of the effort. I have sitting in studio my dear friend and sister, who is a pediatric cardiologist. She takes the heart, opens it and looks into it and inspects the pieces. She's a big woman. Professor Nana Echayal, good to see you.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Good to be here.
So let me get your own ranking. In terms of how big COVID is, would you rank it as 1 being very low, or 10 being very high, or somewhere in between?
So where high is supposed to be
10, how big an issue, how disruptive is it of your work, how big an issue is COVID-19,
right,
from where you sit?
10 and beyond.
Wow. 10 and beyond. I'm looking at a statistic from the World Economic Forum, and it says across the nations of the world, in several nations, 1 out of every 10 health workers is infected. And it tries to give a picture of the level of impact COVID-19 is having on health professionals. And it's just humbling to look at the conditions under which you guys are working. And it says that just in terms of even logistical requirements alone, quoting from the World Health Organization, every month, frontline health responders around the world need these basic supplies and more to protect themselves and others from COVID-19. 89 million masks, 30 million gowns, 1.59 million goggles, 76 million gloves, 2.9 million liters of hand. It just is calling the numbers, and I'm asking myself, since you started practicing medicine, have you seen anything so disruptive? Let's start with you.
Absolutely not. I don't think there has been anything, and in your own words, that is so disruptive. And the word is disruptive because it disrupts everything from the most minute matters to the most important matters. So from the person who does the laundry, the washing of the bed sheets in the hospital, to the surgeon, everything is disrupted, absolutely everything.
Give us an idea about the value chain and how COVID has superimposed itself on the various deliverables. Because until last week, many people called me high ranking, different from different backgrounds, and said, listen, this is the first picture they've gotten of really how much your lives have changed as a result of COVID-19. And for me, that was humbling at one point and also insightful at another point. So give us an idea about the different aspects of the value chain and how they've had to change. You mentioned the laundry. What has COVID got to do with laundry?
Exactly, because if the person who does the laundry is infected, then the person doesn't come to work. So if that person doesn't come to work, it affects whether you have clean sheets, whether you have clean laundry, you know, to do your work as necessary. So that's just, in quotes, maybe a small aspect of it. But for example, hospital work and clinicians, one of the mainstays of our management is meeting together, discussing patients on a daily basis. Now, when the whole pandemic started, of course, all the meetings were cancelled because we didn't know where it was going, so it was just social distancing. So that has been greatly affected, meeting on a daily basis to discuss patients and being able to say that, okay, this is what we've decided on this patient, this is how we're going to move it forward. So that is affected. Then at the very beginning, everybody was coming to work, and we realized that it's not a very wise idea, because if everybody comes to work and everybody gets exposed, then basically the whole unit has to shut down. So then we split into two teams, at a certain point three teams, so that, you know, the nurses, the doctors come on an alternate basis, so at least if one team is infected, the other team can still work. So it has reduced the manpower, reduces the amount of surgeries, for example, in my field that you can do. We were doing three a week at one stage, we were doing none at all. And then recently we've gone up to doing one, maybe two a week, depending on the manpower.
From another perspective, it is reported over and over again that because of the intense nature of COVID and the resources it draws, other issues or other medical conditions that are not COVID inadvertently get less attention or sometimes get ignored completely. Would that be the reality on the ground?
It is the reality. It is really, I mean, very real. And not just, it either gets less attention and gets ignored. For example, I work in a specialty where at the Kolebu Teaching Hospital, mainly the three of us are able to provide a certain service at the Department of Child Health. Now, some of our staff have volunteered and work, you know, directly with in the COVID centers. So as a result of that, it reduces the manpower that is left to manage the children with heart problems who are in the hospital. And that places a huge demand on the personnel that are left. And it also places a bigger demand on the health personnel who is offering his service at the COVID center, because the person goes to the COVID center and still has to come back to Kolebu. So it is a huge demand on medical personnel, both the frontliners and those who are left behind to manage. Then again, patients are scared of coming to the hospital, thinking that they can contract COVID. So as a result of that, although they are sick, they stay at home. By the time they do come, the complications are much worse than if they had come sooner. So it's the impact is across board, huge.
So in our discussion last week, Nanada Zigansa, who's an anesthesiologist, and of course they provide support when you are doing surgery, mm-hmm. and he says, in dealing with emergencies, really, you don't have the chance to even test the person, get to know their COVID status before you attend to them. So he was describing the nature of their job. Anesthesiology involves going right in there.
That's right.
Two people I just get to think about, yes. The anesthesiologist and the dentist.
That's right.
The places of the operation are right at the most vulnerable point.
That's right.
Let's talk about that.
Well, the thing is, it's interesting that from an anesthetic point, he does say that. But I also say that in my specialty, where I deal with children, I say, you don't know when the child is going to sneeze.
Right.
The child cannot control his sneeze or his cough like an adult. So say the child is infected with COVID, the child just, and you're attending to the child, just totally sneezes or coughs, you know. So
and right, they're in trouble.
The very point. So that on its own is a huge risk. And that is very similar to the anesthetic, you know, team. Some dentists in certain sectors give certain solutions for the patients to gargle before they start inspecting, you know, the oral cavity and doing any, you know, interaction there. So in a way, that is protected. But yes, it's right in your face all the time.
Do you fear sometimes?
No, I don't. I don't, no, not at all. I don't, because I say that, okay, so from a practical medical point, it's important to take the precautions. And the precautions is your mask and the social distance and your hands. We have one of my colleagues, you know, said that your little finger does very little when you're doing things. So use your little finger to open the door, to touch things if you have to, and be conscious of the fact that once you touch your face, then sanitize your hands. Once you touch your mask, sanitize your hands so that you don't touch your face. So maintaining the, you know, the protocols are very important, and maintaining social distance, and not just for yourself, but then people tend to, not everyone, most people are not comfortable wearing a mask. So when they want to talk, then they lower their mask, but that's not the point. The mask must remain. So you must constantly be telling patients or the people that you come into contact with that raise your mask, keep your mask over your nose and your mouth, so that they also do not, in case they are infected, you know, transmit anything. Yeah.
It's 15 minutes past the hour of 7 o'clock. My guest for tonight is Professor Nana Chayao. She's a pediatric cardiologist, and she's representing several other medical personnel out there, and we're bringing on board some very interesting dynamics today. But you know what? Last week we asked you to say thank you to any medical person that you think has done a good job and deserves to be celebrated. We had over 500 entries, and we knew we would never finish celebrating you last week. So anytime I want to catch my breath, I'm going to mention a few names and just see somebody says thank you to you. So in case you get so tired on the job and you think this is so difficult and so rough, be encouraged that somebody actually thought about you. And the entries are coming from all over the world, and that's what makes it even more important. So let's say a big thank you to Dr. Enimbuama of Legon, and then Sandra Nyakun. Let's say thank you to Dr. Ernest Kenu. Dr. William Ochre from Paul, my brother, you are mentioned here. A big thank you to Dr. Anna Brew. Somebody is celebrating you here. All right, Doreen Edubevel, somebody, you're celebrating upon Edmund Jr. And then Dr. Andre Kwisikuma, also a good friend of mine, you are celebrated here. Dr. Robert Asari of the Cocoa Clinic, you are getting your big thumbs up here. Kobe Blay, who will be on the show very shortly, you also are being celebrated. Janet Okran, Seriram Mikado, and then Gabriel Ketemepi. I'm going to come back very shortly with more dedications to our medical personnel. This show is not just about finding out what you do, but also saying a big thank you to you, because without you, we would all be dead by now. So, Doctor, I'm going to come to you, Dr. Nene Chayao, to continue this discussion, but let's go to one of the most interesting people in this whole mix, the contact tracers, those who go chasing people. Let me talk to Abigail Brago of Fosuhine, who's a field epidemiologist. Abigail, good evening.
Good evening.
Please don't be offended. I just quoted a tree proverb that says, Asem empeo nipa, nipa nepa asem. Do you understand, tree?
Yes, please.
Is that a fair description of your work?
Yes, please.
I say yes, please. So tell me, you by the very nature of your work, I mean, for the benefit of those who may not know, give us an idea about what an epidemiologist does, and then we'll go into the field part where you go chasing trouble. Give us an idea, Abigail.
Oh, okay. So basically, what we do is to keep track of the cases. Who has it, where they had it, when they had it. We collect various forms of information and use the information that we gather to develop guidelines to slow the spread of the disease. We also use that information to identify hotspots within the community. For instance, we can have a community within the community, an area that all the cases are, most of the cases are coming from, that becomes a hotspot for the cases. So we want to find out what's going on within that community differently than the other side, that the people are getting positive, that are testing positive. So we gather information on that. We try to find out if there is a source, there is a point where the infection is coming from. So basically, that's what we do.
Abigail, if my human defensive mechanism is anything to go by, when you hear of a volcano, a fire, anything, you avoid the hotspot, you avoid the source. Your job requires you to go rather into the source of the trouble. Give us an idea about the kind of response you get from contacts when you get into touch in touch with them, and you go tracing the contacts of people who are infected or exposed. How, what kind of reaction do you get?
Some of them are very cooperative. Some understand exactly what's going on, but then we have some people too that don't want to have anything to do with us. Some will just hang up when you introduce yourself to them. Some will give you wrong addresses. Some, you come to their homes, they are hostile to you. And even some of the address will lead to unfamiliar and dangerous locations. So basically, that's the reaction we get from some of the contacts. But with this pandemic and other outbreaks, we had the support of the police and immigration officers. Like my community, my district, for instance, we have the police and the immigration officers that usually go with us. So security is somehow provided when we go out. But it depends. Everybody reacts differently. So we have some contacts that are okay, and we have others that don't have anything to do with you. But at the end of the day, you still have to go in. You still have to find a way of getting through them. And usually we get that result.
Give me an idea about the most dramatic case you've had. Have you had somebody run away and you chase the person? Give me an idea. I have a very fertile imagination, so help me. Have you ever had to chase a patient? Give me the most dramatic situation you've ever had.
So about 2 months ago, we had a case. We called her. She gave the phone to someone. She was just trying to throw us around. So we gave the contact to BNI, and BNI was able to pinpoint her location for us. We went in there. I did assessment and I realized that, home management was safe for her. But then because of the earlier encounter we had with her, I decided that I'll keep an eye on her because she was still in the infected state. So I went there in the morning. We're supposed to take samples of those in the household. So the laboratory guys went in there to take the sample. So she thought that was it for the day. I went back in the afternoon when her case was locked. I asked around, he said that, she's going for a prayer for me. And I was like, we've discussed all this, and she still went out. So I asked around, and I realized where she was going for the prayer for me. I called her, she didn't pick the phone, so the disease control officer was able to get through to the pastor, it was the lady, and she thought she was coming for consultation. So we had ambulance ready, everything ready, and just when we had her, we just told her that no, you are not safe for home management, so we're sending you straight to the isolation center. So this is how dramatic sometimes the whole thing goes.
Now that's total drama. So what, the person who was infected actually went for a pray for me?
Yes.
So did you then have to turn your attention to all those in the pray for me as well?
Yes, please.
Wow, that's like multiplying your work by how many, 100, 200, 300. Were you angry?
I was upset, but you know, it's individual. It's individual. The way we all understand things. So she's not seeing the magnitude of the whole thing. She thinks she's having some minor, mild symptoms. So it's nothing big. And if really she has it, she thinks she needs spiritual help to just get rid of it. So it's the way we all think and reason individually that results in some of these issues coming up.
How would you rate the level of our awareness from where you sit as a field epidemiologist? How would you rate the level of our awareness about this pandemic and our own responsibility to ourselves and to the community in which you operate?
dedication is out there. We're doing all that we can to educate the public, but it's like attitude. We have this attitudinal issue with everything. So even those that are testing positive, they want to understand things in their own way. You try to tell them something and they are trying to understand it differently. So yes, people are aware. People are aware that it's around. But some want to really see, like they really want to see that this person had it, maybe this person died before they take it serious. So yes, the awareness is there, but our attitude towards the change, towards the protocol, towards protection, that is another issue altogether.
Abigail, my curiosity has been raised by something you mentioned in passing. You mentioned that the woman was in the infection stage. What stage is that? How many days into the point of contact with the virus would you call the infection stage?
So with the guidelines, we take 2 weeks from the day you had it. Or so we use the day that you tested. Okay, so within the day that you tested, we start counting for the next 14 days. So now, if within that 14 days you come out, then the new protocol allows us to discharge you. Previously, because of the delay in the testing and the results coming, it got longer. But now the results are coming as early as 2-3 days. I had a young guy. That this Monday, he came in unconscious. He was on oxygen for 2 days. He was sent to the GAIS around 3 p.m. today. And if you look at the presenting symptoms that he came with, he's just within 1 week. So he was at our isolation center, but didn't really have a place of stay. So he's still within the infected space. So leaving him to go home on home management when he doesn't have a permanent place of stay was risky. So based on that and his health condition, we decided to let him go to the GAIS so that he gets better management there. So the incubation period is a factor in decision making.
Abigail, let's find out the impact on you yourself as a person, your faith, your diet, your thinking, your emotions. How much have you changed as a result of being on this project?
When I'm on the field or working on cases, I don't eat, I don't drink, because I can't truly convince myself that I'm 100% careful. So I usually take a good meal in the morning, then probably when I'm done for the day, after washing down everything, then I get something. So it got to a time I wasn't eating well, so my blood level started going down. But then I knew that I had to be strong for myself, for my family, and to do this work. So I had to quickly change my diet. And the other issue has to do with fear. So we are all out. Like we are not afraid. I mean, we go out there boldly, but there is this constant fear when you come in contact with clients daily. 2 months ago, I had a client I was managing at home. She just had a baby. She was rushed to the facility, and she was bleeding. I reported in the morning, and I went to her. The BP was low. She was still bleeding, and the cover up, I couldn't fit in. It was a small size, and I had on just my cloth mask and my gloves. But I look at this woman, the BP was dropping, she was bleeding, and I couldn't just let her bleed, because I knew at that moment it's not a COVID that is going to kill her. It's her present health condition that is going to kill her. So I had to go in. I had to set up a line for her, set up some sleeves for her. I had to resuscitate her. Then I came back. I knew I've done the wrong thing. I've breached protocol. The what if? What if I get it? What's going to happen to me? Is my immune system too strong to overcome it? What if I don't make it? Who's going to take care of my kids? You know, all these things keep playing in your head, and sometimes it gets funny ideas in your head, but through it all, I think the support system has been good. My husband has been very supportive. There are times I come home and I'm like, because of what I've gone through today, I need to have minimal contact with you. So he has to move out, and he moves out. My spiritual parents, Reverend Mrs. Santimetal, they keep praying for me all the time. They pray for me all the time. With that assurance that I have this support, it keeps me going. With a kid, it's a total ball game altogether. My little girl will ask me, "Mommy, are you going to work today?" Because literally, I work 7 days a week. Over the weekend, I do 12-hour shift at the emergency unit. The Monday to Friday, I do COVID-related activities. And I'm not home most of the time. And every day, she will ask me, "Mommy, today, will you go to work?" And sometimes, it gets so emotional, but this is what we set up to do. This is what we play to do. So we have no option that we just carry our bags and just move on to the building week.
If you had to do this again, will you do what you do again?
I'll do it over and over again.
If I had to ask you one word, what keeps you going? One word.
What keeps me?
What keeps you going?
Oh, the fact that I want somebody to do exactly what I'm doing to me if I find myself in that situation. That keeps me going. That I'm not doing this for anything. I'm doing it for myself. I'm doing it for God. That keeps me going. That's my motivation.
As a pastor, I just wish I could just add a prayer to the prayer of your spiritual parents and everybody else that you mentioned. Is your husband with you? Is your husband by you?
No, I'm at work.
Oh, you're working even now. You know, when you go home and you have finished all the cleansing, say thank you to your husband for us. What's his name?
He's Derek Asamoah-Fosinhene.
Derek, we celebrate you. You're also a hero in your own right, because obviously without your support, Abigail won't be able to do what she does. So I'm sure he's listening, but Derek, we thank you for what you do to just make it possible for Abigail to do what she does, which makes it possible for us to live and for those who go to the spiritual centers to be chased to the pray for me and brought back home. Charlie, you will live long. May the Lord bless you.
Amen.
31 minutes past the hour of 7. This is Springboard, your virtual university. Behind the scenes is the place to go for the story behind the story of the management of COVID and our health personnel. Why do we celebrate them? Because they are doing a big job. In other countries, they line up on the streets and clap for them. We want to find out the inside of the inside. So when we are clapping, we clap with understanding. Let me say a big thank you to Flo Ashiagbo, medical personnel. Jenny Zotto, you are being celebrated. Cecilia Arthur, you also are being celebrated. Francis Onhene, you are being thanked. Ofosua Okaikwe, listen, if somebody's name is mentioned and the person is not on Springboard tonight, call them and tell them somebody is saying thank you to them. Somebody is called Margaret Annan Dennis, you are being thanked. Okay, so somebody is thanking Soji Tete. Of course, why not? Benji Amwakwata, you are being thanked here. And then Amele Osisian, you are being thanked. Abna Ochefrempon, your husband was thanked earlier. You are also being thanked because you are a medical family. Charlie, it's not easy when both husband and wife are medical personnel. Prof, that's a very tough one. And I've had a couple of them on the show, Amma and her husband. And then I think it was Titus and his wife as well.
That's right.
Right. So that one is double jeopardy.
Challenging.
I should do a show for spouses of medical personnel. Find out what it means to be a spouse of a medical person. Let's put on board a pharmacist and find out how the whole practice has changed as a result of COVID. I have Jennifer Kuma Boateng on the line. Jennifer, good evening.
Good evening.
Were you listening to Abigail?
Yes, I was listening to him.
Charlie, my heart, my mind, I just didn't know how to relate to it. Talk to me, Jennifer.
Well, Abigail has said a lot. And in this COVID era, healthcare professionals, we have been actually battling to get our patients do well. In the pharmaceutical area, you know, COVID is a new thing, and every medicine we are using is new. We don't know the long and short-term effects on the COVID patient. And so when it comes to pharmaceuticals, all the team members on the management team relies on you for their drug information. And it is the first time we are using it in COVID. You know, there are certain diseases that we say that if you have a certain disease, certain medicines are contraindicated. For example, if you are an asthmatic, NSAIDs are contraindicated. Here is the case, we don't know much about COVID. And the new medicines we are using, it's like the first time we are trying on our patients. And so when the colleagues call on you, Jennifer, this is happening, so what do we do? You have to give an answer because it is between life and death. And they know it is the pharmacist who should give them the final response on the medication therapy they are giving to the patient. And so it hasn't been easy. But by the grace of God, I pray every day. I read a lot about the medications we give to our patients, but I back it with a lot of prayer, mixed with faith, that whatever input I give, whatever advice I give concerning the drugs they are giving to our patients, will yield good results. I remember we had a patient who is a foreigner, and it was around that time that there was this news that, oh, hydroxychloroquine is not working for the wives, they are dying, blah, blah, blah. But in Ghana, we were using it and we didn't have issues with our patients. And so the team members, everybody was afraid to put this guy on hydroxychloroquine. And he was in a very bad state, very, very bad state. And they said they were relying on the pharmacist to say something. So I said, you know what? I called a few people I know who are pharmacists, they are senior most. We discussed few things and then I said, we are going to give this. Everybody said, Jennifer, let's try it. And so we started. That day I got home very late, around 9:30 to 10, because the guy came in very late. When I got home and after performing all my rituals, I went to bed trying to get some rest, and I heard a voice. I said, if I get up and pray, otherwise tomorrow you go and meet the dead body of this man. I just jumped into prayer. I said, God, this man cannot die. I prayed. And I say to the glory of God that the man recovered, that the family members were even surprised, because I heard the man even wrote his will because he thought he would not survive with all these respiratory distress on oxygen and all of that. And so it becomes critical when the pharmacist needs to make suggestions, needs to give advice to the team on the choice of medicines to give to our patient. It has been very challenging, but I thank God that through it all, he has been with us.
Tell me, what concerns you the most? Is it the fear of legal responses or personal failure? What is it that keeps you on the knife edge when you are making these decisions?
Initially, I was afraid things may not work because everything, as I've said, is new. So I had to overcome my fears. The first month where I worked was the first facility to admit the first few cases that came into the country. So even before the treatment protocols came up, we had to come up with our own treatment protocol at the hospital before we had a national one. But then, initially I was afraid that this is new. Would medicine give us good results? If even it give us good results in COVID, what other safety issues? I was concerned about safety issues. How is it going to affect other things in that person? But I said, hey, I need to overcome these fears and then be strong and then help save people's lives. And so I need to constantly feed myself with the word of God to drive away these fears, read very well, read widely, and build my confidence. And so initially there was a fear, but now, no, I don't fear anymore.
We thank God the fear has been cast away. One last question, a quick one. So I find that because of stigma and because of people's determination to keep their status secret, even if they suspect, many people have had to resort to self-medication, and people WhatsApp recommended medications around. So when you start getting what you think are the symptoms, that you want to balance yourself and go and see some pharmacist on the side and do the wrong thing rather than go for the proper diagnosis. Is that a true representation of the kind of pressure you guys work under?
Yes, it is actually happening. People are self-medicating, as you have said, because of stigma. When they even start experiencing the signs and symptoms, they don't even want to go and test for them to be told they are positive. And so they read all these social media prescriptions. People are making videos and audios, putting it on social media. They try everything, both traditional, orthodox, they combine everything. And it is a big challenge to us because it poses a lot of danger to the health of those who are doing that.
What would be your recommendation?
I recommend that, you see, these days hospital attendance has gone down because of this, but everybody at least should find a pharmacist, get a relation with a pharmacist somewhere that you can actually, you can even give a call that I have read this on social media. Is it good to take it? And at least pharmacists, we are one of the few healthcare professionals that you don't need to book an appointment before you come for consultation. People call us anytime. People bump into us at any time. See, so at any time, you speak to a pharmacist on what you want to do, because doing it yourself and self-medication can pose danger to your health, and that may end you up in some serious conditions in the future.
Jennifer, a big thank you to you. Jennifer Kumabuatin is a pharmacist, and she's been bringing us a very, very different perspective from Abigail, but also very useful. I'm going to come back to my studio guest to give me an understanding of what these two perspectives bring to bear on the discussion we are having. Dr. Professor Nana Chanyao, I mean, brilliant submission by Abigail, brilliant submission by Jennifer. From where you sit, where does that leave us?
Well, I think whilst they were talking, you know, I was just thinking of war. And I think when soldiers go into training, they commit to defend their country, no matter what. And both these brilliant health workers have said exactly that in different words, that it's the commitment to stand by the sick person no matter what and say that, look, a failed epidemiologist, Abigail said something brilliant, that no, she knows that she would like someone to do the very same for her. And so this is what she wants to do, knowing that she's making a difference. Our pharmacist friend has said the very same thing. I want to ensure that the patient she described gets better no matter what. So I think when we train as doctors, we all take an oath, in quote, and the oath, you know, says many things. But I think the most important thing is that the patient comes first. The person who is sick comes first, and that's where the commitment is, no matter what.
There's so much we are learning about what you guys do, and at the end of this series, apart from everything else, it also helps us to appreciate not just your sacrifices, but the kind of information that if we had will make your work better. I just, one of the things that I still am thinking about is this woman who went for a pray for me with her COVID and had to be chased there with an ambulance. That's crazy, eh?
Absolutely. But it just shows the strongholds of our traditional mindsets, that this is, you know, pray for me is where I ought to be. Yes.
I need prayer as well. It's 18 minutes to the hour of 8 o'clock, and there's so much more we have to talk about. But let me go for a brief commercial break. When I come back, I'm going to talk to Kobe Blade, the man who's got fans back. Kobe Blade is huge. Let's find out what Kobe Blade has to say. He's a nurse and he's a blogger, health blogger. Let's find out what Kobe Blade has to bring to the table. But this is Springboard, your virtual university. My name is Albert, and I'm doing this on behalf of Legacy and Legacy Enjoy 99.7 FM. Springboard is your virtual university. Matriculates you every Sunday at 7 and graduates you every Sunday at 8. The only virtual university that does that in 1 hour. And this is brought to you by MTN UMB, the Enterprise Group, and Access Pension Trust. Let's go for a brief commercial break. When we come back, let's bring on Kobe Blade.
Spin your passion into a business with Shopify and break sales records with the world's best converting checkout. Let's hear that one more time. The world's best converting checkout. Shopify's legendary checkout makes it easier for customers to shop on your website, across social media, and everywhere in between. Now that's music to your ears. Any way you spin it, you can be a smash hit with Shopify. Start your dollar a month trial today at shopify.com/records.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia, movement that inspires. Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Hey, Drew Scott here.
And I'm Jonathan Scott, reminding you that life's better with a home policy from American Family Insurance. They can help you get just the right protection at just the right price and help you save when you bundle home and auto. Kind of like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. It'll be just right for you. We love a custom build. American Family Insurance. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
Ness and the blogger, please don't go away.
Everyone says I'm a Kosia filler, but it's not like I'm nosy or go out to find out the latest filler. It's just that I get 50 megabytes of data free after paying for only the first minute of every call. And so I just keep discovering stuff minute after minute. That's how come I was minding my business, scrolling through my timeline, and I found out Coco has a new baby. Oh, and lastly, I learned Ken won the lottery. You see, Ken is my brother's friend. So hello, look who's about to roll with the rich and famous.
Enjoy even more value with MTN Free After One. You only pay for the first minute of your call on MTN Free After One, and the rest is free. Plus, you enjoy free 50 megabytes worth of data to browse your favorite sites. Compare where, compare then. So dial *315# to sign up. Good day for you everywhere you go. Terms and conditions apply.
How do you intend to sustain yourself when you retire?
My children will take care of me when I'm retired.
I am a professional. I can work till 80.
Some people leave their retirement to chance. How are you planning yours? Your attitude today can help you avoid struggling to survive when you retire. With 50 Ghana Cedis monthly investment in the Axis Pension Plan, you can accumulate 700,000 Ghana Cedis in 30 years. This investment will guarantee you retirement income that far exceeds your current income. Visit www.axispension.com to sign up or call 0302-543-287 or 0544-321-966 for details. Axis Pension Trust, your reliable partner in pensions.
UMB was established in 1972 as the premier bank for the corporate and private sector in Ghana. From our very beginning, as the only Ghanaian bank serving all categories of businesses, we set a standard for excellence and innovation over the past 45 years. We've built a financially healthy and strong bank, demonstrated our commitment to our customers and to growing businesses, and exhibited originality and innovation at every turn. At UMB, our focus is built around people, service, products, and technology. These are the key to our present success and our future triumphs. At UMB, we're poised to make a difference not only with our customers, but also in the banking industry. We invite you to share in our future. Our future starts now with you.
When you don't have the Enterprise Advantage app, you're not in control.
Boss.
Yes, Akwesi.
I'm at where they sell the coats. What size do you like?
Ah, what coats?
Coats. Office coats.
Ah, I said get me a quote. Quotation from Enterprise.
Save yourself from the stress. Take advantage of the Enterprise Advantage app. Make your claims, check statements, request for a quote, and buy a policy from any of our subsidiaries. What's more, you can also get health tips, traffic information, find mechanic shops, and more on your Enterprise Advantage app. Download the Enterprise Advantage app on Google Play and Apple Store now. Here is to 95 years of trust. Enterprise, your advantage.
Enterprise is your advantage and Springboard is your virtual university. A big good evening to you, Dr. Emmanuel Srofenyo, of the Ghana the Greater Accra Regional Hospital, the Ridge Hospital, you are being celebrated here. Ajua Frimpoma of Kolebu, Margaret Gakpo, you are being appreciated here. Richard Salome, you are being appreciated. Dr. Theodore Buafu of Kolebu Teaching Hospital, you are being appreciated. Dr. Amachiri Wayobin, you were on the show last week, you are being celebrated. Dr. Rex Jokutu of KATH in Kumasi. Dr. Eunice Menta Tre Mensah, you are being celebrated. Juliana Agbasa of Maritime Hospital in Tema, appreciation is yours. Roberta Bauer of Tema Polyclinic, you are being appreciated. Of course, Teddy Totime, a big thank you to you for what you do. And then Dr. Rex Jokutu, we'll do as many as we can as we go along. But let me add on Majua Ajiman, a midwife at Ankaful Leprosarium. Let's say a big thank you to you too. Great place to work. Right, let me go to the lines and bring on Kobe Blay for this discussion. Kobe, good evening. Hello, Kobe Blay, good evening.
Good evening.
Charlie, when I grew up, I'll be like you. Charlie, the fans is too much.
I actually want to be like you so that I can get even more fans.
Charlie. Tell me about your life as a nurse and as a blogger. What drives you? And then let's find out how COVID has changed everything in your personal practice and perspectives.
I think I am sort of living my dream. And growing up, I actually wanted to be a Catholic priest, and a Catholic priest who does humanitarian activities and supporting people, improving life. And I just wanted to serve. So growing up, it's basically been like that, serving at the altar and then serving people. And so at a time like this, there's nothing more fulfilling, I must say, to be at the front line and playing active role together with my nurses have become the sort of the heart of healthcare delivery, and of course at the front line, who have sort of become the midfielders in this whole game, coordinating the response activity, seeing to it that the doctor's orders have been carried out, seeing to it that lab investigations are being carried out, seeing to it that patients' problems is being addressed, is getting psychosocial support, seeing to it that the family is okay, the family is calm, the family is able to put in their best support, making sure that the patient at the right time goes to get radiology, the chest x-ray, seeing to it that all the documentation that has to be put in place and later referenced to by the researchers and all that is being done. So it feels so good, it feels so fulfilling at the same time to be actively involved, especially amongst a group of nurses who have become the heart of this whole response at the front line.
Kobe, you described nurses as the heart, and at the point you mentioned the midfield. One school of thought believes that while the doctors deal with the main issue, the nurses get to be like pastors. You deal with the before, the middle, the after, the post, everything. You are literally like goalkeepers, coaches, defense, midfield, everything. Is that a perception that you hold?
You realize that anytime there is a problem in the hospital, a nurse is being blamed. Even at the mortuary, they will say the nurse did not do this or that. Even at
Kobe, position yourself well. I really love the perspective you are bringing, and if the line is a challenge, get yourself into a good position so we can hear you very well, because Dr. Professor is smiling here in the studio. Are you sure? What you are saying is very familiar. So Kobe, are you okay?
Yes, I'm watching, so that's probably I may have to...
No, it's clear now. Go ahead.
It's clear. So what I'm saying that is that you realize that any issue that sort of happens in the hospital, a nurse is apportioned the blame, even at the records, even at where you have to make payments. Even at the mortuary, a nurse is being blamed for not having some... Because the nurse is always seen as every aspect of healthcare in the healthcare delivery service. So... of course, the nurse would always be found guilty of one thing or the other, because we are almost and always in every activity that goes on in the hospital or the healthcare.
It's humbling to talk about living your dream and growing up wanting to be a Catholic priest and ending up as a nurse. Do you see that as a substitute for your original intention?
Of course. I mean, being able to be with a patient right before, during, and after, I mean, it's more than fulfilling. So sometimes I get colleagues who see and say, you should go back to go and do medicine. I'm like, no. If I go back to medicine, would I be restricted to the consulting room? No, I just want to be by the bedside of the patient. And you realize that even during these times that COVID-19 is here, the nurse is the one who is more exposed, spends most time with even the highly infectious places. The nurse has to attend to the patient 24/7 or at every routine time of the day. So it feels so good having to listen to even the patient when they are gone back home, having to even find the appropriate person to see a patient, because especially when you are responding to an emergency, you want to know which doctor is even capable of even responding to this emergency that well. And so it's more than the dream, and it's even better now being a nurse.
So have you ever been shocked by the reaction or by a situation you've had to deal with, particularly in this COVID era?
You mean shocked at seeing how people are behaving? Or
has anything shocked you? People's behavior, peculiar challenges, just a sense of inadequacy? Has something shocked you, anything, in this COVID era?
I think that for me, the last area I had my specialty in and have been working was in the mental health area. So I have worked in quite a number of key psychiatric hospitals around the country. So I've seen quite a number of shocks where you are almost living on the edge and not knowing what next is about to happen. And so you have to always be on the edge. But I think COVID brings a new perspective where there is almost a barrier to everything you're doing. There's always a limit to which you do something or can allow someone to be in. And so it's a daily shocker. I mean, and it's something I have grown to get used to it. I think some of the things that even excite me is sometimes you admit a patient and has to go into the treatment center. And there was a situation where the daughter of the person who had tested positive, the mother, the daughter wanted to enter the treatment center. She actually entered and was like, no, I need to go and be with my mom. I asked her if she knew exactly what we are dealing with. She said, yes, but she has to be with the mom. And there are other situations, like, took care of an old woman who was over 80 years. And I remember that I spent quite a lot of time when I attend to the patients in the morning. I mean, every morning you go in to see the patient. And she in particular, I took a bit of much more interest that during, you have to make sure they are bathed. Sometimes you have to give them a bed bath or the PPE, or you could take them to the bathroom and bath them with the support of your colleague. And anytime I finish bathing, I put powder on her face and then fix her headgear. I had no idea she could even make me out. The last time she came for review and I just got out of the center and I told her, welcome. I thought she wasn't going to notify who I was. She was like, and that really bit me. And for sometimes, anytime I find her coming around for review, I try to hide because I didn't find it comfortable. She talking that, oh, you'd really take care of you. But again, it's quite interesting and exciting at the same time.
Kwame, that's a very beautiful description. I want to go around and show me headgear. So you know how to fix headgear. Kwame, thank you so much. I've gone to your site to check out the pictures and then the stories. Keep your work going as a blogger. That's one thing that I think really is a gift that you have that you shouldn't abandon, because you tell the story apart from what you see. And I look forward to having another discussion with you when we get a chance again. So thank you, Kwame, for your contribution. And Ghana owes you a debt of gratitude, and God richly bless you. Let's come back to the studio. You are our resident lecturer today, Professor Nechayo.
Yes,
another interesting one.
Very.
A male, yes. A male nurse and a female patient saying, thank you. You fixed my headgear. You took care of me.
Absolutely.
I think that we've told the difficult side, the bad side of the medical profession, and there's quite a bit of that. But I think it's, for me and for Springboard, very fulfilling to tell the the beautiful side as well, so the world knows what you do.
That's
now,
right.
let's just find out from you, not just about what you yourself sacrifice as a person, but hearing what other colleagues also do. What does it do to you as a professional?
It's extremely humbling, very, very humbling, because every person has their personal challenge, you know, be it at a family level, be it at different levels of challenges. But to think that my colleagues leave all that behind and come to work and are committed to make somebody better so that they can leave the hospital and lead their lives, it's extremely humbling, very, very humbling. And it fills me with a lot of gratitude.
What can we do to make this better for you?
I think the ongoing support, the understanding that the public shows, that our families show, certainly goes a long way to make us better professionals.
Are we doing better now than before?
I think we are, because I think COVID has brought to light the medical soldiers of our society, who are the medical workforce. And yes, the support, the appreciation, the understanding is extremely useful for us. Yes.
Final point: your colleagues last week used the words comrade falling on the battlefront. You've used the word war. You've used the word battle. Do you see this as war?
It is a kind of a passive war, and it's a war that, you know, involves, at a mental level, at a spiritual level, emotional level, and a physical level. I think at the beginning of this COVID era, one of the big challenges was when we lost the rector of the Ghana College, and that was absolutely, and it brought, personally, it made the reality more real, if I can put it that way, and that is the fact that COVID is real. We are in a very challenged medical system. We have a fragile medical system, which at the moment is burdened with a disease that we don't fully understand.
You believe in prayer, don't you?
Absolutely.
Let's spend the last minute of the show praying for all health professionals. We don't normally do that on the show, but I think it's a beautiful thing to do. So let's, wherever you are, let's pray for our medical personnel. Father, we thank you for all our medical personnel on the front line, doctors, pharmacists, nurses, epidemiologists, cardiologists, every single professional involved in this venture. We thank you for their lives, for their profession, for their sacrifice that has brought us so far. We ask for wisdom for them. We ask for understanding. We ask for your personal protection, for protection for them and for their families. Father, be there for them as they lay down their lives for us, and give each of them something to rejoice about. Fill their mouths with laughter and their tongues with singing. And when all is said and done, may each of them look back and say, this was a sacrifice worth making. And may you bless our homeland and make our nation great and strong. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen.
This has been Springboard, your virtual university. I always say beyond the lockdown. Behind the scenes, we'll return next week. This time, we bring in recovered patients of COVID, telling the story in a way you've never, ever heard before. As you join us again next week, but we'll cross over now to beyond the lockdown and look at phase two of easing of restrictions. And we will have, on the program, the information minister.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.